As was pointed out in the preliminary remarks, the subject of our lecture this evening is the meaning of impersonality. Again, as was introduced to us, this is by way of preparing our hearts and minds. It's a very important day in theosophical calendar that's approaching us, 25th of June. Because it's on that day, in the year 1919, the founder of United Lodge of Theosophists, Mr. Robert Crosby, laid aside his mortal body. And as is pointed out, we celebrate it not as a death anniversary or anniversary day of Robert Crosby, but as ULT Day. We have brought a special notice announcing the special meeting, which can be had at the inquiry table. You can take some of these with you and distribute among your friends. Robert Crosby was one of those unknown soldiers in the great Army of Voice, whose members were working with one heart and mind, directed by one will to live to benefit mankind, to redeem every creature from this world bonded existence. He was one of those who embodied the esoteric principle to appear as nothing in the eyes of men. He was not only a disciple of H.P.P. and Judge, but the masters who were behind H.P.P. And he was a witness to all the things that happened after the death of Mr. Judge. After the death of H.P.P. and Judge, the tears unfortunately had to pass through the various vicissitudes which befell other great spiritual organizations in the area. And then he was a silent witness to all this, especially after the death of Judge in the States. Tears in America split into several factions. And the students began to forget the real message brought by H.P.P. They began to follow personalities, each claiming to be a success at H.P.P. without realizing that such a spiritual successorship is not possible. There cannot be an apostolic successor with regard to spiritual matters. One has to acquire through his own merit and actions that kind of a state where he can really become a leader. Having seen this all silently, patiently, waiting for the opportune time, he waited for nearly 13 years. And in the year 1909, he gathered other six like-minded students along with him and founded the first center of the One United Lodge of Theosophists in Los Angeles on 18th of February in the year 1909. And he gave us a charter which we call the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. It contains certain eternal principles and ideas, which is the framework within which the students of ULT are allowed to, are free to do what they can for the spirit of theosophy as given out by H.P.P. and Judge. During his lifetime, Mr. Crosby found that the trouble with the whole split up and what happened after the death of Mr. Judge was the personality cult. People were following the personalities without realizing personality would be only a medium through which the person who happens to occupy the medium should pass on the message unsullied. Therefore, when he gave us this meeting, he had two things in mind, namely to resuscitate, to revive the original recorded teachings which we provide in the Lim Quan Church, which was lost. And secondly, to lay great emphasis on impersonality. He said, it is not to the person that we get to know the person, but it is through the message left by the person that we get to know and get into the very minds and consciousness of that messenger and those people who sent her into the world as the messenger. Therefore, he laid great emphasis on impersonality. And that's why, one of the reasons why we're thinking of the subject today as to the meaning of impersonality. Now, the meaning of impersonality, the subject is a very difficult subject to understand. the subtle variation in that, and much more difficult to apply it in life. Before we go to see what exactly is meant by impersonality, we must understand the fundamental teachings of theosophy as to what man is. To put it briefly, quoting from Isis and Wales, where S.P. Blavatsky gives us the articles of faith, S.P. points out, yes, there is a unity of God, the immortality of spirit, and belief in the salvation through merit and demerit only. To put it slightly differently, in the secret doctrine she points out, there is one universal divine principle, which is omnipresent, which is called by Vedantin Parabrahman or Paramatma. It is the only ever-living vibrant reality, which in manifestation becomes dual. There's two aspects, spirit and matter, subject and object. Whereas in this matter, through matter, every atom of matter, the spirit is throbbing. As everything comes in manifestation through one life, everything is conscious, sentient, vibrant with life. Every atom is throbbing with life. There is nothing inorganic or inanimate. And the whole, the life itself, manifests in manifestation the universe as a law that governs the universe. When applied to man, this law becomes the law of karma, the law of retribution, the law of ethical causation. And this law is nothing but the law of involution and evolution. The law which ultimately tries to produce a perfect man. The whole evolution is nothing but for the production, the emancipation of a perfect human being. As Patanjali would put it, the whole universe exists for the emancipation, perfection of man. Now in this process, therefore she points out that man is an emanation from divinity, on its turn farther too, that man is nothing but an unfolding God. He is one in identical, one in essence, spiritually and physically, not only with the absolute principle, but the manifested Ishvara. Therefore, whatever attributes, whatever characteristics one can give to the Ishvara, the manifested Ishvara, not the absolute, all of them are inherent in man, as man is a direct ray of the absolute. He has all the potentialities and possibilities which are infinite in him, provided he is able to control his personality, in which the immortal entity indwells, informs, cannot manifest. If he is able to control and conquer the personality, then the immortal entity in him can manifest uninterruptedly. In one place, H.P. points out, when the lower a personality is paralyzed, the indweller manifests uninterruptedly. But from that point of view, yes, there is an immortal entity ensheathed in a mortal body, to which we give the name of Nama Rupa, or name. Now, Mr. Crosby, in his own inimical, simple way, defines it slightly differently in one of the articles in the Friendly Philosopher. He says, try to look upon man, reflect upon him. What is it changing? What is unchanging? He is not the body. We are not the body. If we try to reflect upon ourselves, it's all the time changing. Once in 7 years, the coat of skin completely changes. There's a Nitya Pralaya going on all the time. We are not our psychic nature, or the astral body, which is all the time changing. We are not even our desires. Our desires keep on changing. We have one set of desires as a child, another set during adolescent period, the third set somewhere else. All these things keep on changing. There is something else. We are not even our minds. Don't we often say, I've changed my mind? There is something more beyond all these things, which seems to be changeless. Because if that also is changing, we won't be able to perceive any change. There is that changeless aspect in man which is able to perceive all the changes taking place in him and around him. And the changeless entity is a continuing entity. Call it by whatever name you like. That continuing entity is called by Vedantins as Sutratma, or the reincarnating ego, which bridges the gap of sleep, not only sleep and dreams, but life and death. That's the immortal entity. Taking on each birth and each birth a new personality, undergoing evolution. Now in one place, this will be points out in the key to theosophy, the distinction between personality and individuality. In order to understand the meaning of impersonality, it is essential for us to find out the difference between the two. There is that self-conscious being, the simple being that he is, self-conscious entity, I am my consciousness. And there is also the complex being in man, which we call Mr. X or Mr. A or Mr. B. What is this complex being to which we have given a name, Nama Rupa, a name? Complex being which has an akara, a rupa, a form, in terms of size, in terms of shape, in terms of weight, color, sex, race, etc., which has a psychic nature, which has likes and dislikes, which has its own peculiar characteristics, peculiar mannerism, behavior, conduct. All these things, if you analyze, these are all nothing but bundle of experiences we have garnered daily throughout our lifespan, which keep on changing, which go to make up the personality. And this, supposing we want to find out who is Mr. A? Is it a tall man, soft-spoken? This is what we say. We don't talk about is it immortal entity or the characteristic immortal entity. We, unfortunately, this bundle of experiences which are strung together by a memory, to which we give the name, the Nama Rupa, with which, unfortunately, the self of man gets identified. The moment we identify ourselves with the Nama Rupa, that moment what happens? All the impressions that we get through our five senses, the sense data that is collected by the five senses, are colored, vitiated in terms of our conception. In other words, when you look at an object, it's a vibration. This vibration impinges upon our retina the sensation. The sensation is converted, yes, and into kind of perception. And this perception is based on our conception that we have already. Conception in terms of, yes, what is the nature of the deity and man. Now what happens is, in most of these cases, I would say it's not conception, preconception. With the result, whatever impressions we get, it's all color. That means we don't see things or persons in the true perspective. Now, because we have identified the self, has identified itself with the changing personality, which only it informs and inhabits. But that which inhabits and inheres, she inheres, this particular personality is the immortal reincarnating ego called Sutratma, who takes on, birth after birth, a new personality and plays different roles in the great drama of life. One night Hamlet, another night Macbeth, third night King Lear, etc., etc. Starting this vast evolutionary journey right from the stage of a Pucker-Arian sprite, and graduates himself from the school of earth as a magician prosper. It's a magnificent imagery given in the Key to Theosophy. If time permits, we'll read it later on. But if we start from the lowest thing and graduate ourselves the great magician, perfected human form. That's the gamut of evolution put forward by Theosophy. Therefore, there is that entity which is changing, which is the personality, and there is that which inhabits, informs that changing entity, the immortal individuality. This immortal individuality is also known as the reincarnating ego. Now, when you tackle the subject, what is impersonality? Impersonality simply means selflessness. When we say selflessness, it doesn't mean we are asked to annihilate ourselves or disparage the self or to mortify ourselves. Not at all. It doesn't mean that we should be absolutely cool and negative, have a negative attitude towards others' feelings or others' woes and sufferings. It doesn't mean that at all. It only means separating the self from objects and other persons. In other words, that is, trying to cultivate an attitude of detachment. Detachment from objects and persons. And from ourselves also. It's a beautiful saying that we should become pallbearers to our own funeral. It's a wonderful statement. The whole point is, unless we become objective to ourselves, we won't be able to have clear vision. See things in the right perspective. Supposing somebody comes to you with a problem and you are not involved. Therefore, you can perhaps give a correct solution, objective. Supposing the same thing happens to you. Since you are wrapped up in emotion, with the likes and dislikes, with all kinds of things, naturally, you won't see clearly the solution. Therefore, even to your own things, you should become objective. You should be able to detach yourself so that the vision is not colored. And this can be done only by cultivating unselfishness. By centering our consciousness on that which is eternal in us. Not on that which is all the time changing. See, if we are centering our consciousness on the personality which is changing, naturally, it is colored by our likes and dislikes. By so-called indoctrination, by upbringing, so many things. Therefore, the only way by which you will be able to cultivate this kind of a vairagya or detachment is to cultivate unselfishness. And cultivate that heart quality that our heart should go out, the compassion to all that lives and breathes. Because the moment you realize that you are one in essence with the one reality, all of us are the same. Therefore, all of us are indissolubly linked with the whole in the one reality. Therefore, willy-nilly, we are all brothers and sisters. Therefore, once you understand this, yes, not only should you be able to cultivate unselfishness, but practice brotherhood, universal brotherhood. The moment you have that, that's your in the right attitude of cultivating the impersonality. The law of karma works irrespective of persons. It's most impersonal. It's not respective of persons. Like that, without fear of favor, we should be able to act from the inner point of view. As you said, this is very difficult to apply. It's easily said than done. But this has to be done. Unless you do it, you will not be able to give out the teaching of theosophy, pure and simple. Now, applying this impersonality, how did Mr. Crosby apply this impersonality to duality? Before that, we would like to give out how, by identifying ourselves with the personality, our visions are getting colored. What happens is, this identification of the self with the personality happens because the corporeal body is very prominent. In this world, where diversity is prominent, the one shining in the many, we are unable to see the one because we are deterred by this prominent personality. On this plane of duality, delusion prevails. So look, in the Bhagavad Gita, although Arjuna had looked upon Krishna as his guide, as his guru, right in the second chapter, and in the 11th chapter, after having the Vishwarupa Darshana, or the world vision, he realized that he was a great being. Nothing more. Even then, till the 18th chapter, he was looking at Krishna as a separate being. Only the 18th chapter, when he came to know that, when he realized that Krishna was none other than Arjuna, or himself, who entereth into me without any intermediate condition. Then he says, Nahto moha, Hrudaya labdha, my delusion is destroyed. As long as you are in the plane of duality, this delusion will prevail. Therefore, unless you transcend the plane of duality, get into the plane of unity, or that non-separateness, you won't be able to appreciate truly things as they are. Here, we would like to quote from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where the sage Yajnavalkya is giving instruction to his wives Gargi and Maitreyi and also King Janaka on the subject of Raja Yoga. Here he says, for when there is duality, as it were, then one smells another. One sees another. One hears another. There is no another. So one thinks this is delusion. One speaks to another. One thinks of another. One understands another. But when everything has become the self, then by what and whom should one smell? By what and whom should one see? By what and whom should one hear? By what and whom, to whom should one speak? By what and of whom should one think? And by what and whom should one understand? By what should one know that by which all this is known? By what, my dear, should one know the knower? He is unseen seer, the unheard hearer, the unthought thinker, the unknown knower. There is no other seer but he. There is no other hearer but he. There is no other thinker but he. There is no other knower but he. He is yourself, the inner controller, the immortal. Everything else is evil. This clearly indicates that as long as we are the plane of duality, we will not have the correct vision. Or true impersonality cannot practice. Now applying this to ULT, United Lodge of Theosophists, how does one look? How does the work go on here? ULT is, as I said, is a unique forum where the names of speakers are not indicated, are not given at all. Because we are giving out a spiritual philosophy which has nothing to do with personalities. Although the personalities have to speak and give out this teaching, which must much involvement in the whole thing without any coloring the teachings. It's important for us to understand that it's an impersonal teaching. And those people who come here to learn something, gain something for themselves, will find themselves a misfits here. And those of us who try to gain some success or personal gain will also find misfits. And those of us who want to rule, will slowly and steadily see that there's no, they have stopped progressing on the spiritual path. And those of us who try to, what shall I say, lead the Guru, those people also will say. You see, there is an incident in the Mahabharata, Dushasana, the brother of evil-minded Dhritarashtra, was unrobing Panchali. But what happened? She tried to seek refuge in Krishna. She was holding a sari and cried, Krishna, please help me. The moment she removed her hand without holding the sari and prayed, surrendered to him totally, then only the robe began to become absolutely infinite, length of infinity. The total surrender should be there. Unless you submerge your personality, the impersonality cannot come forward. Well, from that point of view, yes, the moment you are able to, sincere student is able to voluntarily be able to give time, energy and money, that moment he becomes a true student. The person, even those people who come to the platform, well prepared, and if they're still self-conscious, there's a possibility that they may not progress very well. The moment you give up all hope of any reward and anticipating any praise, that moment, yes, the student has to do the homework, come and give as impersonally as possible without expecting anything in return. That kind of system works here. Reality is the forum where each one, yes, we are asking only those students who can assimilate the teachings to come forward and take their hands. Now, let's look at some of the quotations that we have here, which we have culled from Robert Crosby. In one place, in one of the articles collected in the book Friendly Philosopher, he says this, let's see. Some of these things we already covered during the course of our lecture. The question of personality is so large that it might seem as though its successful solution should resemble the working out of a complicated mathematical problem. But the greatest truth is the simplest. And if we reflect a moment on what impersonality is not, perhaps that will help us to see what it is. Some orate forcibly against personality. This does not prove they are free from it. Please note that. And a person may talk against personality. That doesn't mean that he is impersonal. Some say little, but the effect of what he said is to imply that they are impersonal. They seem so modest, but are only quality. See, any person who asserts on the platform also will find that his progress is stopped. Very clearly indicated in our philosophy. Some are afraid to talk about personality, thinking that it must be shunned as an ogre. Yet others preach a doctrine of impersonality, which takes everything human out of life. Cold, calculating, negative attitude towards others' feelings, and makes of it cold negation. This doctrine has no patience with evolution. All faults must disappear at a single stroke. Because theosophy is nothing but pure altruism. Not for himself he lives, but for others. And Mr. Crosby in one place says, a person comes to theosophy and sits for development is not to develop himself, but to equip himself to be the better able to help and teach others. And he also says so humbly that if you are taking up this theosophic work and doing it, it's not because we are eminently fitted. Somebody has to do it. There is no one else to do it. Impersonality isn't talking. It isn't silence. It isn't insinuation. It isn't repulsion. It isn't negation. Above all, it isn't diplomacy, which makes ambition. Impersonality means freedom from personality. But none of us are going to attain to that right away. As I said, it's very difficult. We are doing well enough if we are persistently, albeit slowly, overcoming. For practical purposes, if you are developing the child heart, if you are learning to love things beautiful, if you are becoming more honest and plain and simple, if you are beginning to sense the sweet side of life, if you are getting to like our friends better and extending the circle, if you feel ourselves expanding in sympathy, that's important. If you love to work for theosophy and do not ask position as a reward, some people yearn for the name and fame. If you are not bothering too much about whether we are personal or impersonal, that's fine. We should grow as a flower grows unconsciously. This is traveling on the path of impersonality. How beautiful he has put it in simple words. For T.S. in America, impersonality means not to worship itself as an organization. This is what happened after the death of Mr. Church. People started worshipping leaders and organizations to endeavor to get broader and freer, to merge itself more and more into the living spirit of the movement, its higher self, to neither despise itself because it is a form, not exalt itself because it is a soul, to become less doctrinal and more human. We have another quotation here from letters that have helped people, Mr. Church. Now, in our daily experiences, see in our family, amongst our kith and kin, or with our friends outside, or in our office, we meet so many of our friends, our superiors, our subordinates. How do we conduct ourselves? When somebody comes and tells us something, have we got the patience to listen to him fully, having asked him to explain? Or do we have the urge all the time to put ourselves in front, saying, I know, I know? How many times do we do that? How many times our ego comes up? We ask somebody to speak to us and we don't have the heart to listen to him. See, if only you can suppress this kind of a feeling, try it one day, you'll find it very difficult. It's not easy to overcome this kind of a tendency. We put ourselves, who are we? Nothing. We are a non-entity. And here is a quotation from Mr. Judd's writings, which sometimes is taken to mean as a path to self-realization. True impersonality can be obtained by only adopting or applying this principle. I'll read it slowly. Begin by trying to conquer the habit, almost universal, of pushing yourself forward. This is what we do all the time. Whether you're talking with your wife or husband, or with your children, or with your superiors, or with your subordinates, everywhere this kind of habit is there. This arises from personality. Do not monopolize the conversation. Some of us are so fond of hearing our own voice. Unfortunately. Keep in the background. Very difficult of application. If someone begins to tell about himself and his doings, do not take the first chance to tell him about yourself. How many of us here in this particular thing? If somebody says something about himself, then we start saying about ourselves. Do not take the first chance to tell him about yourself, but listen to him and talk solely to bring him out. And when he has finished, suppress in yourself the desire to tell about yourself, your opinions and experiences. Do not ask a question unless you intend to listen to the answer and inquire into its value. Try to recollect very, very damaging and very positive assertive statement. Try to recollect that you are a very small affair in the world. You won't accept it. Try to recollect that you are a very small affair in the world, that the people around you do not value you at all. And grieve not when you are absent. Very, very important esoteric principle. We think too much about ourselves, failing to realize if you are not there, nobody is going to miss you. Try to recollect that you are a very small affair in the world, that the people around do not value you at all and grieve not when you are absent. Your only true greatness lies in your inner true self, and it is not desirous of obtaining applause of others. If you will, you are not the body. Your self itself is without a body. Either praise or blame affects it not. If you will follow these directions for 1 week, you will find that they will take considerable effort, and you will begin to discover a part of the meaning of the saying, man know thyself. This is the part or road of self-realization, which will enable us to practice, yes, the true personality. Now, a few words about the declaration that we have. Here itself, the idea of impersonality is implicit in various clauses of this declaration. The very first clause, the opening clause, says the policy of this law is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, exclusive, independent. Devotion, the cause of theosophy, which is the cause of the masters, cause of all humanity, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. And then it also says, it does not concern itself the dissensions that are between differences of individual opinion. Yes, my opinion and understanding of theosophy may not be the last. It's only an opinion, it's not knowledge. Opinion is not knowledge, understand this. If you want to know what's real knowledge, you must go back to the source documents, the original teachings of Blavatsky, and try to find out for yourself. Then, then it says here, that work and that end is a dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy. What is that? To establish a nucleus for universal brotherhood without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition. These are all the 5 things which go to make up your personality. Yes. And to practice brotherhood. See, and at that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy, of theosophy, and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. Unless you start functioning from the impersonal universal basis, you cannot practice brotherhood. The more and more you try to practice that impersonality, the more and more you come to the realization that you are one, you are not different from other people. And then, it says here, it holds the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and how situated, is similarity of aim. What is that aim? The aim is to equip ourselves to be the better able to help and teach others. Purpose, what is the purpose? To point out the message, not us. To point the message and the messengers behind them, and the teaching left by them. This is very, very important. Robert Crosby's greatest work is, yes, he never pointed out to himself, but he pointed out to the message left by HPP and the masters who were behind that message. Therefore, it has no constitution, no bylaws, no officers. The sole bond between its associates is being that basis. That basis of impersonal bond that unites all of us, not on our physical nature, plain, but on the essential immortal nature. That is why it says, it regards as theosophy all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition or organization. And therefore finally it says, the true theosophy belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Therefore, see, this is the declaration of ULT, where it clearly indicates that, yes, we must become depersonalize ourselves so that we can truly become, yes, centers of light from where real theosophy can flow forth. And one place HPP clearly says in the five messages, each one of us should weld the theosophical principles in our daily life and make it a vital factor in our daily life, and each one of us should become impersonal force of good alone. Impersonal force of good alone. And the end is with one small quotation from Peter Theosophy. In every conceivable case, he himself must be a center of spiritual action, and from him and his own daily individual life must radiate those higher spiritual forces which alone can regenerate his fellow men. We have a few minutes left to take up your questions. As I said, this is a difficult subject not only to understand, but much more difficult to practice. Yes. See the first thing, the first question. See, this is relevant to that particular period in which this is written. What happened? See, after the death of Mr. Judge, you must quote the history of the theosophical movement. After the death of HPP and Judge, people not only started following leaders and personalities, but started worshipping the organization. Organization is not important. If the organic element of the true message is gone, what is the use of the organization? Organizations have to change according to times and needs of the people, but not the message. If the message is flown away and it's only a dead carcass which you are worshipping, what is the use of that kind of a thing? This is what happened. Therefore, they were putting the organization first and then later on everything else. In that context, he says, yes, impersonality means not to worship itself as an organization. An organization should be a forum or a vehicle which should be absolutely organic in the sense throbbing with life. It is not there. In that sense, we say that ULT is not an organization. And then the second question is, you've said about the other quotation, you know, you should not monopolize the conversation. Yes, indeed. That's one of the ways by which you can cultivate that kind of impersonality. Unless you are asked to say, don't open your mouth. I'm simple as that. See, silence has its own reward. See, what he says is, look here, there's a tendency in us, when you're talking with somebody, to put ourselves forward, to give our views, without waiting to hear him fully. Supposing he talks about his own education or his own upbringing or his own village, what he did and all that, we try to tell about our own experience immediately. All of us have this tendency. But he says, look here, try to curb this tendency. And then there is a tendency among some of us to monopolize the conversation also. We won't allow other people to talk. We will try to corner the conversation. And that is nothing but a show of equality. It is ego showing, huh? When we are saying that there is no ego, then why are you showing up all these things? This is the root arousers of ahankaric element in us. That's why he says, do not monopolize the conversation. As he said, this is very difficult to put in practice. That's why, you see, this comes under the head, occult philosophy. The whole point is, yes, personality is important. It's only unless a personality is there, you can't give out the teachings. But what should, see, the whole point is, are we giving out the teachings without coloring it or trying to put our personality forward? This is the whole point. Supposing, see, we don't want people to go into peroration and munaprakriti and parabrahma. We are not here for oratory skill. Have you assimilated the philosophy given out by HPP and Church? Can you give it simply in your own words? At least two things are necessary. You should be absolutely sincere. You must do your homework and come and give it out, you see, without expecting any kind of a reward or pat on your back after the lecture. Many of us yearn for that, you know, after the lecture. This kind of, it's not a desirable feeling. The person will find sooner or later that he's not progressing much. The moment you give up everything, total, as I said, as I quoted from the incident from Mahabharata, unless you give up everything, you won't see that. The moment you are able to serve honestly, earnestly, then there's always the invisible escort who surrounds you, who will help you. We will close this almost time up with another quotation on impersonality. This is a commentary on a rule that comes, look into hearts of people intelligently. Then the commentary says, from an absolutely impersonal point of view, otherwise your sight is colored. If you are looking at somebody, trying to find out, you see, if you know, this person is, I know, is soft-spoken, yes, but he's short-tempered also sometimes. You have that kind of a feeling. But if you're looking at not from the personal, which is obvious, point of view, but from the impersonal point of view, see what happens. Otherwise, your sight is colored. Therefore, impersonality must first be understood. Intelligence is impartial. No man is your enemy. No man is your friend. All alike are your teachers. Your enemy becomes a mystery that must be solved, even though it take ages, for man must be understood. Your friend becomes a part of yourself, an extension of yourself, a riddle hard to read. Only one thing is more difficult to know, your own heart. Not until the bonds of personality are loosed can that profound mystery of self begin to be seen. Not till you stand aside from it, the objectivity, will it in any way reveal itself to your understanding. Then, and not till then, can you grasp and guide it. Then, not till then, can you see all its powers and devote them to a worthy service.